welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Monday, September 28th, 2009. I'm Sam Minter. As usual, I have Yvonne Bo here. Hello, Yvonne.
Yeah, hello.
And once again, we're doing the show on Skype because it worked really well last week. So here we go.
Hopefully, we'll never talk about how we do the show again because it'll
be
work
awesome.
Really well this week.
So okay. Anyway, right. Let's do topic one. We agreed to do Iran. So, Yvonne, since you wanted to do this topic first, give us a summary of what's going on and what importance happening.
Well, this week we had this the UN General Assembly had gotten together, and almost every leader from every country gathered in New York for this. This included
Ahmadinejad.
Yeah, I can't fucking pronounce his name. And I mean, there was a couple of developments with that week.
There was one tech podcast, Leo Laporte, actually, who decided he couldn't say the name, so he was just going to say, I'm a dinner jacket.
I'm a dinner jacket. Okay, I like that.
I'm a dinner jacket.
Okay, so Mr. Dinner Jacket decided to, he revealed this week, and I can't remember during the sequence whether he was exposed and they confirmed it, or did Iran just come out and announce that they were building a second nuclear site that they had kept secret from everyone?
I believe the sequence of events is that Iran just came out and said it. But the background is that they believe that is because Iran realized that the West knew about it and was about to potentially make it public and make a big deal out of it anyway. So Iran decided to preempt them and just say, yep. Yeah, We did this. Now, I could be wrong because, once again, I've been a little
bit. I am
so
pretty sure that is right, because this week, I mean, I heard first the Iranians say it, and then right afterwards, Obama, Gordon Brown, everybody came out and they were talking about this, and they were talking about how upset they all were about this. Now, the one thing is that today I went to the gym and I was working out, and over on the gym they have all these big plasma TVs with all the stuff that's going on, and one of the channels, they always have – they have CNN on one, they got Fox on the other, and they – whatever. So the Fox guys are going on and they're talking about is engaging Iran – is diplomacy with Iran – an option? Should we pursue diplomacy? Should we pursue? And I'm like going, and maybe I'm stupid, but other than the diplomatic channels, what options are we going to invite Iran? Are we going to bomb them? I mean, is this really an option?
Do you think there is
a realistic military option?
No, I don't think there's a realistic military option, although there are some that would still advocate for it. But I think generally the alternative people are advocating here is
just doing nothing?
Nothing, but sort of the shunning them, doing the isolation thing.
When has that ever worked?
There's an argument that sanctions had an effect in South Africa, but I don't think to me, it's always seemed like that kind of a technique might have an effect in the really long run. But in the meantime, generally, all you do is hurt the people without influencing the policies of the government.
That's what I think, too. I mean, I think that that engagement is always better than complete disengagement, because I think that's what the Bush administration has pursued over the last number of years, and I don't think that was that really successful at stopping the Iranians and getting a nuclear weapon.
I've said this before. I mean, I think the What are the problems here?
What are the realistic options? Say we don't engage them diplomatically. What are the other options?
Options are basically shunning them or military action. Now, and I don't think either one of them are really effective. And, I've said this before. I think it's not realistic to think you are going to prevent Iran from getting nuclear weapons. And our double standard on this thing. I mean, for God's sake, Pakistan has nuclear weapons.
India has nuclear weapons.
Well, yes, but I'm giving Pakistan as an example specifically because they're not exactly a paragon of stability.
No, not at all.
You know, India, okay, you know, there's a chance that they might go to war with Pakistan at some point, but you're not really afraid that India is just going to randomly start shooting nukes off at, you know, whoever. You know, and we, our standard is all, you know, we don't have, you know, when it comes to non-proliferation, it's been fairly clear that this country's attitude going back, you know, all the way to the 40s is basically, it's fine as long as they're friends of ours.
Right, pretty much.
You know, and that...
Well, obviously, well, that changed a little bit after the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty was signed, and I think that,
well,
you know...
No, but even... I mean, Pakistan gained their bomb after that.
Right, but nobody's happy about it either.
Well, nobody's happy about it, but on other hands, you know, we're not freaking out. Well, we're not freaking out because... Let me backtrack.
When we found out that Pakistan and India went, you know, they detonated those bombs, everybody freaked out.
Well,
the fact that we could, there wasn't anybody that anything that really could be done.
Well, no, what I'm talking about is that nobody's going on the warpath saying, "Oh my God, we have to do something."
Pakistan.
And you know, somebody brought up the other thing. I mean, with Iran, I mean, you know, regardless of what we think may be really going on. Openly, what they've said all along is that they aren't after making a nuclear weapons capability, although it clearly would be in their national interest to do so. So it's not surprising that they would. But
just to maintain a mutually assured destruction.
Well,
thing,
no. What they've said publicly is that they're after a civilian nuclear program for power. And there are plenty of other countries that have declared they're doing civilian nuclear programs for power, and they operate under the same inspection, you know, regimes and declarations and everything else. And, you know, an example somebody gave is nobody starts freaking out when Brazil develops a nuclear reactor.
Well, I don't know. Who the hell thinks that the Brazilians are going to go nuke anybody anyway?
Well, exactly.
I mean, come on. It's like the same argument I made, you know, why were the September 11 terrorists not Latin? I mean, Jesus Christ. Are you kidding me? If it was a bunch of Puerto Ricans, it would have been like, oh, we have to make the 8 o'clock flight? Ah, shit, I don't know. We went out the night before. And, oh, God, you know, the rum was too much. We missed the flight. I'm sorry. But anyway, we'll try to commit suicide tomorrow. I mean, seriously, come on, people.
We only have a couple minutes left. I mean, I think the reality here is we've got to come to terms with the notion that, you know, the nuclear genie is out of the bottle.
Right.
We have to figure out how to live in a world where you have to assume that most countries are going to have the capability.
But the truth of the matter is that, let me tell you something, getting the weapons themselves is the biggest waste of fucking money there is.
Absolutely.
There is nothing you can do with these, what are you going to do?
So, look, if you launch
one, you're guaranteed your own destruction.
Right, exactly. So let Iran waste as much fucking money as they want doing this if they ever use the damn thing.
We'll fucking obliterate them off the planet.
You know, or whatever. I mean, and there would be public support for whatever level of action was taken. Now, maybe not actually turning the country into a field of glass, given the civilian casualties that would result. However, you would...
Let me tell you something. If the Iranians go and take a nuclear weapon and detonate it over a major civilian target, say, in the United States... I really don't think anybody is going to bother.
If it's Iran, they're worried about Jerusalem.
Let me put it this way. If that happens, I don't think, even if, say, it's Tel Aviv, I don't think that anybody is going to care about, well, at least in the U.S. or probably in Western Europe, they're not going to be huge, massive opposition to the obliteration of Iran. Okay? So this is idiotic.
I think there would be support for a response that dealt with Iran. I think if we responded with eye to an eye, you would get a lot of internet. You would get a lot of objections. Maybe not from everybody. Maybe you'd have majority support.
They're not going to be that strong.
But you would have issues. Anyway, we got to take a break, and we will be back after this.
AfricaFocus.org features high-quality analysis and progressive advocacy on African issues with a particular attention to priority issues affecting the entire continent. The heart of the website is the Africa Focus Bulletin. Other features include regularly updated Africa-related news feeds and a set of country pages with extensive background and links on each African country. If you follow African issues or are even curious, visit AfricaFocus.org today.
Okay, we are back. So, enough about Iran.
Here's the one thing that you talk about that, and then you go to the different approach. Well, Gaddafi was in New York this week, for the UN General Assembly. Yes, go ahead.
I was just going to introduce and say, for this segment, we're going to do a foreign policy smorgasbord, because I just like saying the word smorgasbord.
Smorgasbord. Okay, so, you can pronounce it well, too.
I was going to do this as a little intro, but Yvonne actually was right on top of it and, doing the segue right into it. So go ahead, Libya.
So the one thing is that – so Gaddafi went and he actually he addressed the UN General Assembly, which he hadn't done in a long time because he hadn't been allowed in the U.S. And a lot of people said that it was a very rambling, 2-hour-long speech.
Did you actually watch it?
No, I read some of the stuff that he said. I actually did not watch it.
Okay.
Now, some of the things, for example, that he talked about, he talked about condemning the UN Security Council. Because he said that, for example, 5 countries that were powers 50 years ago have veto power. Why the hell does that still make any sense?
Yeah.
Talked about a whole bunch of stuff like that. To be quite honest with you, after having heard, say, Hugo Chavez, talk about Lucifer being there and just when Bush gave a speech and whatever, he was actually not that off the wall. Okay. Yes, he did go into certain things, but it wasn't too bad. Now, Gaddafi was later interviewed. He actually volunteered to be at an economic forum with a whole bunch of people. And he was pretty low-key, and he was pretty, how do I say, pragmatic in most of his statements. People were actually very surprised. Talk about a guy who was a big firebrand 20 years ago and how, he was just – trying to be pretty pragmatic. People asked him even the tough questions. For example, they asked him about Lockerbie, and he said about Lockerbie that he could understand, for example, why people are very upset. He wasn't like – but the point that I'm saying is that I think that his counter-argument is, he says that, you talk about a terrorist nation, and I'm like, I'm sorry, but I'm thinking about it from his perspective a little bit. I mean, I'm sorry. We bombed the fucking bejesus out of Tripoli, okay? The U.S. did. We flew bombers and fucking bombed the city ourselves.
As far as I know,
we actually killed some of his children.
Yes, we did.
I think
we killed his daughter, who I forget the age, but like was a child at the time.
Yes, I mean, so I I'm thinking to myself, I'm this guy, right? They're trying to fucking crucify me as a terrorist when we've actually taken planes, flown him into the city, and killed. Is part of his family, I think that sometimes, I know that we focus so much on certain terror acts, like for example, like that, and I guess that we sometimes forget the kind of actions that we do could be construed by others
in
the same vein.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that there have been times where people have tried to put together sort of international conventions on terrorism and stuff. And one of the things that has never come out of those in terms of an agreement.
What the hell is terrorism?
Is a simple definition of terrorism. What does it mean? And the reason is because almost any definition you come up with of the term will have one of two problems. Either it will be so incredibly narrow that there are no terrorists,
Right.
Or it's going to certainly include things like Lockerbie, but at the same time include various acts that major Western powers have done, either historically or recently in some cases. Now, you know, it all depends on the definition and which definition and what cases come up. But the problem is that whenever you try to pin it down and say, this is exactly what we mean, then it becomes something where you can point that in every direction, you know, and people are very reluctant to put into place any kind of rule that could potentially bounce back on themselves, because the thing has always been, you know, and you know, the whole torture thing is a perfect example of this, where yeah, torture is bad. Torture is always bad. Oh, except when we do it and we have a really good reason.
Exactly. You know, because, and that's why,
because almost everything else falls into that same category. When is it okay to kill civilian children? Oh, well, it's not okay when they do it. But if we do it and we think that we're hitting a high-value terrorist target and it just happens to blow away a kindergarten, oops, are bad. But
oops, are bad.
You know.
Are bad. We're not terrorists. And that's why I'm like, you know, I'm like a little bit – I tell you what, that I've backed off of being – I mean, so much against Gaddafi, because I'm like, I think about it and I think in the overall realm of things and the number of things that America has done – I don't know. Could we just, you know, I can't just sit there, you know, like, oh, we're squeaky clean. We're absolutely snow white. I mean, we've never done anything, you know, reprehensible.
Well, and I mean, yeah, in the case of Gaddafi's daughter or whatever, you know, our target was not the daughter. Our target was him. It just happened she was there too. And,
right.
You know, and we were going after him because his government had done other things that, yeah, I believe it was the German bombings,
right?
The disco in Germany or something. So,
right.
These are all very ambiguous situations if you look at them in the right way. Now, you can also look at them in black and white terms. You know, they're bad, we're good, we kill them. You know, but
we kill them, fuck them, right? But I'm sorry, but it's just not that clear cut. I mean, it isn't. So
okay, we only got a couple more minutes. That was Libya. I wanted to mention.
But what about? You want to talk about? What other foreign?
We got Afghanistan and Honduras.
Okay.
Let's do Honduras first. And I may be slightly behind the times on this, but the former president who was ousted in the coup came back into Honduras. He snuck in. He's now at the Brazilian embassy in Honduras, and the new government there has instituted all kinds of curfews and all kinds of other stuff like that. And you know, basically the situation is very tense at the moment. Although, I admit, I'm behind on my Google Reader, so I might be like 24 to 48 hours behind on what's happening. Do you have an update beyond that?
I heard today that an OAS delegation tried to come in to try to negotiate something, to try to broker an agreement between Zelaya and the government, but that the current government refused them entry into Honduras. I also heard that the Honduran government was threatening the Brazilians because they were – yeah, Zelaya had their embassy. I'm not sure what the hell the Hondurans can really plan to do against the Brazilians. I mean, you know,
I
think they're out of their minds.
Yeah, like Honduras is going to declare war on Brazil. Let's,
exactly. So I'm like, you know, what was – so
– but – yeah, so a tense situation. I'm watching two blogs that from people in Honduras that I found when these first things came up. One is actually Brandy's cousin. I linked to it back then. It's I can't remember the URL. Anyway, I'll probably link to it at some point. But anyway, it's him and some other random Honduran blogger, and they're basically the stuff coming out of both of them is that they're pissed off at the curfews and being basically everybody being confined to their houses. And one of these guys, and they seem to be sympathetic to different sides, but they're both pissed off at the curfews. And basically seeing that that's going to be counterproductive. Anyway, we're almost out of time for this segment. I just want to mention real quick Afghanistan as well. There was a whole deal where the report by General McChrystal was leaked to the Washington Post through Bob Woodward, along with also the leakage of, from quote-unquote well-placed sources that McChrystal was potentially willing to resign if his recommendations weren't followed. McChrystal is basically recommending, going in with more troops and changing their approach in some ways, et cetera. Obama's, the civilian part of Obama's administration has yet to weigh in on, their overall reassessment of the situation in Afghanistan, which includes McChrystal's report, but also other stuff. And so it'll be interesting to see what happens there. I'm afraid this is one of the situations where you really have a choice to make here in terms of you either really go all in and make this a really big, huge thing and commit a lot of time, people, resources, lives, etc. to it, or you get the fuck out and
right
let
now.
It go to hell. Right, get it fuck out right now, and if it goes to hell, it goes to hell. But I think the most dangerous course here, and probably also the most likely, is we try to do some half-ass shit in between.
Yeah, I know. Well, we'll see. I don't know. We'll see what the heck. As much as I would not like the recommendation, the truth of the matter is that I don't like the other option. But there is an advantage here. I've heard during the last week a whole bunch of European nations actually – this is not going to be so much like Iraq. I mean, many other nations are actually willing to pitch in to cooperate. The Spanish this week, I heard actually, as a matter of fact, that there's a new show on CNN International I guess it's 8 a.m. Eastern time with Christiane Amanpour, where she's doing very high-profile interviews she had the Spanish President Zapatero, she had Ahmadinejad, she had Netanyahu this week. The damn show is very damn good, okay? But I don't think they're showing it in the U.S., unfortunately. But she had Zapatero on from Spain, who pledged a significant increase in troops to Afghanistan. Whereas they had pulled everything out before.
So we're out of time for this segment, but I think, I don't know, you're right, there's other support from other places, but it's still a very dangerous place. Afghanistan has a history of, causing all kinds of damage to various people who try to get involved there. And
ask the Russians.
Ask the Russians, ask the British, ask a long line of people going back further in history. I think it was the British. Did I just misspeak? Anyway, whatever.
No. I think you're British. You're right with the British. Yep.
Okay, we'll take a break. We'll be back with some other topics after this.
This is the Curmudgeon's Corner Poem of the Week, brought to you by No-Tell Motel.
In the Dark, Repetitive Coughing, by Arlene Ang. Sometimes it is enough. Julia places her hands on the glass rooster. Footnote 1. There are jagged cuts in the sculpture that show where she is still possible to hurt. She sees against her father as he sliced the coxcomb with a blade before feeding it to the rooster. Footnote 2. Cancer is a bird of beauty. She is swallowed by the world that isn't watching. Her brother stands with a strange haircut. Footnote 3. In dreams of dying, there's a percentage of people who never wake up. She's been here 6 years. Footnote 4. When her family visits, they hug Ghost to Ghost and feel all the more foolish for taking indoor pictures with empty cameras. Footnote 1. Direct application of heartbeat on non-living subjects with the heartbeat intended to probe for life signs or, lacking such, self-violence. Footnote 2. To partake of one's own flesh raw is to partake of courage indicative of war, its presence in the flesh. Footnote 3. Contents of his stomach. Addiction and car parts. Footnote 4. There are many substitute words for love.
For more like this, go to notelmotel.org with a new poet each week and a new poem every weekday.
Okay, we're back. During the break, you missed Yvonne complaining about his knees.
I'm getting old. I don't know. I went to the gym and I actually exercised on a different machine than normal, and my knees are hurting. I don't know. Shit.
Yeah, you know, I've been being a little bit more active than before. I'm not actually to the point of going to the gym and such, but you know, I've been walking more than I had been before. You know, every once in a while, like a couple times a week, I do exercise kind of stuff with Amy. You know, so we'll see. But yeah, you're right. Like if I overdo it, I certainly do feel it. But I'm trying to sort of slowly ramp myself up to be a little bit more, because, you know, I had never been someone who was in great shape, but the last couple of years I really let, you know, it got worse. So I'm trying, I'm trying to get better again. My percent body fat has been going down. My weight has been going down. You know, all this stuff. Anybody curious can go look at the dashboard on my website. You can actually see graphs of these things. But anyway, so our actual topic.
So anyway,
so we wanted to talk a little bit about. And I'm not sure if we have a whole segment out of this, but the various characters running for various offices in California. I mean, obviously, we currently have the governor, but he'll be gone soon. And so we got other stuff.
Is he a term limited?
I believe he actually is.
Okay.
I'm not sure. Maybe not. I shouldn't make up shit. I don't know if he's term limited.
I thought he was running for re-election.
Okay. Then what are these yahoos doing? They can't beat the governor. Come on.
Oh, well, I think a lot of people are saying maybe you can. I think if I understood, I think that Meg Whitman,
and he may not be wrong. He is not super popular right now. He's made a lot of controversial choices. And for that matter, that him winning, you know, just as a review of history, the way he became governor in the first place was not exactly conventional. The sitting governor was recalled. And because the sitting governor was recalled, there was a special election that was not done the normal way. The normal way would be you had primaries for Republicans, primaries for Democrats, and the winners from each go against each other.
Right.
His special election was anybody the hell who wanted to ran.
Could sign up. Right.
And whoever got the most votes won.
Won.
Whether it was a majority or not. There was no runoff. Or was there a runoff? Anyway, I forgot.
I don't remember.
But, you know, I remember the first election where we had, you know, in addition to the governor, Gary Coleman was running.
Gary was Gary. That's right.
At least one porn star was running. Probably more.
Yes.
There were all kinds of. I believe the ballot ended up having. Yeah, somewhere between 100 and 200 people on it. Again, we've got listeners who are actually in California who might remember the details. I'm just making
a lot
shit
better
up
than
out of
we
old
can.
Memory. I just remember there were a lot, and there were a lot of Fruit Loops and a few serious candidates, but the serious candidates basically split the vote because it was just everybody on one ballot, and you know, and so the governor was able to, Schwarzenegger was able to sneak in there, whereas he would almost certainly have never actually won a Republican primary.
So now he would have to go in a Republican primary, I guess, against
He has been reelected since then, I think. So
I'm pretty sure he has.
Once you're in office, it's a lot easier to get reelected than it is to get elected the first time.
No, I agree.
Okay, so wait. Forget about the governor. Who are some of the characters that we see running here?
Well, you know, you've got my favorite moron, Carly Fiorina, trying
for
to run
Senate.
for Senate. But I did hear that Meg Whitman. It says here I'm looking at. I had a friend of ours forward me a link to Carly Fiorina's site. And it's idiotic. She's the slogan is coming soon ? It's called Carlyfornia Dreamin' is her slogan, and I guess that's actually perfectly accurate for her, because I think that, you know, although people, you know, Barbara Boxer only got like a 52% approval rating. When they matched her up head to head, say, you know, against possible candidates like Carly Fiorina, I think she only gathered 22% of the vote was Carly Fiorina versus like 60+% for Barbara Boxer.
Right.
So I don't know. I think, yeah, she is Carly Fornia dreaming.
Well, I think, you know, so some of this is, I think she knows that most likely. I mean,
she's a self-deluded idiot.
There is a such thing as running for office just to increase your profile for something later when you know from the get-go that the politics isn't such that you're going to win.
Like what? Do it for what? I mean, what the hell? What is her future plan? What? She's going to run for what?
Well,
maybe this is a person that was CEO of one company. She got fired, and notice how nobody has been, you know, banging down her door to hire her. Okay.
Look. Here's what's going to happen, and I'm surprised that you can't see this, Yvonne. In 2012,
she'll run for president.
Well, no. You know, John McCain's going to have his big comeback. and then once John McCain beats Obama in 2012, he's going to forget about those comments that Carly made that pissed him off last time around, and he's going to give her a cabinet position.
Ah, that's it.
That's
okay.
The plan.
Oh, it's the cabinet, of course. You know, perhaps. Okay. Well, you know, that might work, especially if McCain doesn't die between here and there. Okay. All right. So
Whitman. What about Whitman?
Well, what about Whitman? I don't know. Honestly, I have no idea about Whitman. I mean, I know that I've heard that she's been very interested in running for office, but you know, I don't know. What do you? I mean, she is a Republican. I mean, but you know, I don't know. I mean, I don't know.
So maybe some of our listeners who live in California should edumacate us on anything interesting going on there. I mean,
I think from
an external point of view, the actual like internal politics and issues in California aren't really coming to the surface very much. It's all just about, hey, there are people who are characters who are running, you know, what is it? USA TV network that like. Characters welcome is their
characters
theme
welcome. Yeah, so that's the slogan.
I think that's what's going on here. I mean, I don't know what the issues in the California governor's race. I just know that there are people whose names I recognize from completely other areas who are talking about running, and
no,
that might
I would
be entertaining.
Really like it. I gotta be quite honest. I would really like it if we had some kind of a good-looking porn star running for Florida governor.
The closer to you, isn't there one running in Louisiana for Senate?
No, there is.
I believe
that's,
so.
That's too far away. I mean, at least over here, you know, I'd be interested to see the rallies.
Yes.
You know, what kind of a rally does a porn star do? I mean, that would be, you know, those would be interesting. Ah, well, anyway, I don't think I'm going to get that. Okay.
Is Jeb running for anything new?
No. We have the current governor is trying to run for one of the Senate seats.
Yep.
Being vacated by Mel Martinez. But no, Jeb's not running for anything. I don't think that he's really interested. You know, I think the Bush name has already been, used enough.
I think the Bush family knows they need to take at least one election off. Maybe.
Yeah,
two.
The other thing is, I don't think.
Jeb it's going to be Jenna.
Jeb was a smart guy. I mean, you know, in the family, considered anyway amongst the brothers. I mean,
he was expected to run for president too.
That's right.
Except his timing got screwed up by losing his first governor run, whereas W got in Texas, Jeb was always the one everybody expected to be the next one to run for president.
Nobody expected W
to do that. They expected him to run his little baseball team and be happy.
You know,
so anyway.
All right. So anyway. Okay. So let's move on. Let's
time for another break. Let's go. Yep. We have our exciting break, and we will be back.
Ready for the test, Dracula?
I'm ready.
Frankenstein.
Then
Let us begin.
Creepy Classics celebrates the classic horror and science fiction films from the silent era through the 1960s, and retro TV horror from the 1950s to the 1970s. Visit creepyclassics.com for all your classic video needs. And when you buy something, tell Ron that the curmudgeons say hello.
Okay. So we're back. Speaking of the various Senate races, I wanted to talk a little bit again about, what happens when senators vacate their seats? Because there's the whole thing going on with Kennedy, of course, where they had this whole situation where Massachusetts changed the law a couple years back when Kerry was running for president, so that if Kerry won, Romney wouldn't get to appoint his successor, because, of course, Romney was a Republican. And then Kennedy died, and they're like, oh, crap, that means we have to wait till a special election, and we're not going to have a senator during this crucial time where health care is being debated and all that kind of stuff. So they've actually changed the law back, and now the governor gets to appoint the seat. He hasn't done it yet, has he?
I heard that they were I thought that they said that some Kennedy aide that was in his office was going to be named to the seat. But my question is, in the law change, was it a permanent appointment or was it an interim appointment up until a special election could be?
Well, it's not until a special election. It's until the next regular general election. So
okay.
It's not filling out the remainder of the senatorial term, but it isn't a special election.
It would be until the next general election, which would be 2010. Okay. All right. So it's only for a year and a half. Okay.
So but it's not like the alternative. The existing law was that a special election would have to be held within like 120 days or something. I forget the number. First of all, there's this whole shenanigans about, and you and I have talked about this before, about changing the law to reflect the political situation of the time.
Which we don't agree with.
It's perfectly within their rights to do, but
I don't want to agree.
Stupid to do.
Right.
And you should generally try to have a system in place that gives you a set of rules that most everybody can be happy with, regardless of who's in power. And when you try to continuously change the rules to force an advantage in certain situations, you're just asking for trouble. Because the other side's going to do the same thing to you later.
Right.
Now, the other interesting one that's going on is Senator Robert Byrd in West Virginia. He was hospitalized again for a time this week. I believe he's out now. He fell or something. And the guy's 91 years old. He is now the longest serving senator, over 50 years. I believe he beat Strom Thurmond's record for time in the Senate, although he has not beat Strom Thurmond's record for the oldest senator, because Strom Thurmond was, of course, senator until he was over 100 years old. So the question comes up, I'm cribbing some of this off a blog post by Chris Weigant, who's the person who used some of my graphs in the last election cycle. But, should there be some sort of limits in place in terms of, a person's, should there be an age limit? Should there be some sort of fitness test? Should there be something? Or is it perfectly within the rights of West Virginians to, re-elect someone? Like, if Robert Byrd decides to run again, he'll be something like 95 or 96 at the next election. I forget exactly. And he'd probably win. Is that okay? Or should we just trust the people to do that?
I think it's okay. I mean, this is not a term limited seat. I mean, if they want to reelect him, I mean, I don't see why the hell not.
And the reality of the situation is that, let's be realistic here. He's probably not going into the depths of the legislative process, figuring out what the hell he approves of and disapproves of, and doing his staff is doing that.
Right.
He just has to sort of drag himself up to the podium and say yay or nay at an appropriate time.
Well, I honestly, I don't know. I mean, we're making judgments here about his mental acuity. I mean, I have no idea how.
No, he's apparently actually in okay shape with that. I mean, he's.
Well, that's what I was going to say. As far as I've noticed, I mean, I've heard him speak, and I mean, he seems still to be a pretty sharp mind at the moment. So
I would generally agree with you. I don't think there's a. As long as someone is actually mentally up for the job, I don't believe in automatic age limits. It's just like every once in a while people give the, same kind of thing for driver's licenses. You know, when people get old, they're like, you know, we should do something special, or people shouldn't be able to drive after the age of 75 or whatever. I think really what you want is a uniform set of rules on competency that you apply to everybody.
Right. That's right.
You know,
that's right.
And frankly, I'd say the same thing for under 16.
Yes.
You know, you come up with the set of rules, the set of competencies that you have to be able to demonstrate, and make you re-demonstrate it every X years. Pick what X is. And if you pass, you pass. If you fail, you fail. Doesn't matter what your age is.
I mean, I've seen a number of people that are, let's face it, not 60 years old that should not be allowed to drive. I mean, those people I don't think would pass those exams. Now, I will tell you this, that the most exhilarating drive that I've ever – or car ride that I've ever had in my life was of a guy that was close to 70 years old who used to race Formula One, okay?
Okay.
Who drove me around a racetrack like about 6 or 7 years ago. His name is Bob Bondurant. He has a race driving school in Phoenix. And, you know, I happened to be lapping the track. I'd gone to his school, and usually you take it with students, but Bob Bondurant is still an active guy. He still, you know, he still always goes there every day. It's his school. You know, he saw me what I was doing around the track, and he said, look, I need to take you around the track. Let me show you some stuff. I said, okay. And I will tell you that the best driven lap I've ever been in a car in my life was in the hands of a 70-year-old guy. And I've never had anybody in a car drive that well. And I'm like, shit, if these are his diminished skills, I said, shit, I can't imagine how it was when he was, you know, young. So, you know, I think that a proper test to determine is enough. And,
now, having said that, honestly, from a current driver's point of view, who's in his late 30s, would I be pissed off at having to redo a practical driver's test every couple years instead of filling out my form?
I don't think that would you be looking for people. I don't think that you're looking for a practical driver's test. I think that what you're, you know, the things that you're trying to weed out are other things. Reaction times, things. That's why I said a standardized test necessarily.
Maybe you don't get them behind the set of an actual car and have someone watch, but maybe like in this day and age, maybe they sit in a simulator and run around the track and things pop out in front of them and you have to avoid them and there's stop signs and you have to do the traffic correctly.
Right.
You have to not speed when you're not supposed to speed and all that kind of stuff. That wouldn't be too horrible, I guess. But at the same time, I'm like, you know, I can imagine going into one of those for the first time and whatever and being like, okay, now wait. Am I supposed to turn on my turn signal 300 feet before, or
But you see, my thing is, but remember that in that test, I would. You see, what I'm saying about that test is, you already passed the test. You're already out there. You've got speeding. You know, speeding tickets or whatever. This test is not a test to see if you can follow the rules. This test, what it should show is what your reactions times are to things, unexpected things, and those kinds of things, and whether your peripheral vision is still working properly. For example.
Okay. I could see that, but if you're gonna do it, you might as well test on the traffic rules too. I mean,
I don't agree. I don't think. As a matter of fact, I've seen that in states that are doing some testing for older people, they're not testing for those traffic rules. They'll go and say, for example, they'll make them take an eyesight test, for example.
Yeah.
Or another test. They're not looking for that. You already have a driver's license. Why the hell you test that shit again? No.
Well, you might forget. You know,
no.
you might think the octagonal red sign means go very fast.
Oh, it could? Oh, well, you know, that's why
although my problem, and then we have to take a break, that at least a handful of times every year I get caught by this. I stop at a sign. I stop at a stop sign, and then I realize, like, a minute or two later that I'm sitting there waiting for it to turn green.
You're a moron. Okay, let's go to a break.
What do you get when two housewives produce an online poetry journal? Poems celebrating dishwater, breastfeeding, and lunar phases? Quick trips to the pool boy? Maybe. But they like to believe they offer much more than that. There's no telling what you'll get at the No-Tell Motel. But I hear sneaking out and keeping everything hush-hush is kind of sexy, and they're hot for discretion. Having it all keeps our two housewives awfully busy, so they like to stop and smell the posies, spend quality time with their poets, which is why their rendezvous lasts a full 7 days, a new poem each weekday. Each year they slip their room key to 52 poets and indulge in 260 poems. Their spouses' misfortunes are your gains. Meet with them daily at notellmotel.org. They'll be in room 5C, sipping the latest cocktail recommended in Martha Stewart's Living, Scribbling Marginalia.
Okay. All right.
And we're back with Yvonne still cackling about me waiting for the stop sign to turn green. You know, within the last year, I have only once turned the wrong way onto a one-way street. It was a highway entrance ramp, but anyway.
What?
I thought it was a different street.
Oh, for the love of God. No, now I know why we get these wrong-way drivers. Jesus Christ. You know, I don't know if I ever told you this, that one time driving on a highway, getting towards my house, there was a guy coming down the highway on the left lane, coming at me the wrong way. Now, I was driving down the highway, and it was late. It must have been like 1 in the morning. But all of a sudden, I'm looking ahead, and I see these lights in front of me, and I realize that it was somebody coming at me. Okay, but you know, because you don't expect that, and I swerved out of the way and avoided it. But you know, I was like, "Holy shit!" I mean, if I hadn't reacted as I did, I was going to get killed.
Yeah.
Okay. So, but okay. So now I see. Well, anyway. All right. Okay.
So, the last thing on our list here. And this may not last the whole segment either, but I just wanted to mention a few sort of, I guess iTunes, iPhones kind of stuff. Let me talk about
that. You mentioned that your iPhone to me was acting up.
So here's what happened. This is as of, like, first of all, my iPhone has acted perfectly, or pretty damn close to perfectly, the whole time I've owned it. Yesterday, all of a sudden, it starts freaking out on me.
Like, I'm doing what?
I pick it up, and all of a sudden it does the thing like I've asked it to shut down, and says, you know, swipe here to shut down. I'm like, cancel. And then I try to push a button, and it does it again. And I hit cancel, and I try to push a button, and it does it again. And then I, like, okay, I'm going to reset the phone. So I hold down the reset button, and it turns the volume down. So I'm like, what the hell there? So I try to turn the volume back up again, and it turns the phone off. And basically, it's acting all scrambled. Like, when I do one thing, it's doing as if I'd done something else. And I'm like, crap. This is, you know... And
did
I'm like,
it keep doing it, it stop doing that?
Here's what happened. So it was doing this, and I reset the phone. I finally managed to reset the phone. And basically reboot it. And then it was fine again for a few hours. And then it started doing it again. Although the second time it was doing something a little bit differently. It was as if I was constantly, like, every couple of seconds, flipping the silent switch off and on.
Maybe you were.
Yes, maybe I was. Maybe it was my phantom hand. and so I reset it. And it was good again for a while. After last time I reset it, I think it's actually been good for close to 12 hours now. So I'm hoping it's over whatever got into it.
But, I don't know. Look, I will tell you, my wife. I bought her an iPhone enough a couple of weeks ago. A couple of times for some reason it just shut off.
Yeah.
Okay.
I have seen a few people mention that as a as something goofy going on after the 3-1 update, but that's not quite what's going on with me. I tried to Google what's going on and I didn't find it. I found like one person mentioned something similar, but I haven't found anything consistent. So I don't know. I did not throw this one in the pool. I did not get it wet. I did not like throw it across the room. I haven't done any of those things.
You know, did you buy an extended warranty on this phone?
No. And here's that's the other thing I was going to mention. Like, I generally don't get those on desktops, but on laptops, yes, and on iPhones, yes. I certainly would have. Now, I in general have waited though. Like, I haven't bought them at the same time I've bought the device. I've waited towards closer to the end of the first year, but it snuck up on me. You know,
okay.
Like it was having all these problems and I'm like, oh crap, when did I buy this phone? So I went and looked for my receipt. I'm like, it was about a year ago. And of course it was like a year and 3 weeks ago that I bought the phone, which means it's just out of warranty and just barely too late to buy AppleCare on the thing.
I don't know. Is it? Are you sure? I'm actually looking at it right now to see if it's possible.
I think you have to buy the AppleCare before your warranty actually expires.
Oh, okay.
Because otherwise people would just buy it when they have a problem.
Yeah, that's a shame.
Yeah, well, so I'm hoping it'll be okay. I'm hoping like it had its little issue and it'll be happy.
Well, no,
now.
The one thing is that maybe you could buy it that it's retroactive. So say, because AppleCare goes for 3 years, so say what they'll do is they'll give you a year and 9 months.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't know. I mean, my basic course of action here is if it starts happening again, my next thing to try is like, you know, a complete factory reset. Like, I've just rebooted the phone. I haven't done a complete reset. So I would do a complete reset and restore and see if that helped. And then if it was still doing it, then I would I'd take it to the Apple store and say, can you do anything for me? And then see what they say. I guess.
Burn it.
Yeah, I don't know. But you know, the thing is, like, it's the type of problem that's happening. The first thing that comes to mind is like, this has to be a hardware thing. There has to be a loose switch or a circuit that's something goofy is going on hardware wise. The touch screen's acting up or the buttons are acting up or something like that. But then if it was really a hardware issue, it wouldn't explain why once I do a reset, it's good again for a while. Since it's good again for a while after I do a reset, maybe it's a software issue. If it's a software issue, maybe Apple will be up at sending out 3.1.1 sometime soon and everything will be magically better. I don't know.
I'm looking at this here. The AppleCare can be purchased only while your iPhone is still covered under the standard 1-year limited warranty. Yep, you're right. You're toast.
Yep, so
I'm probably going to get this for my wife's one.
Yeah, this is what I said. I already, you know, said, okay, we've got three iPhones in the family right now. Mine was the first one. The next one goes out of its original warranty next month. So I'm like, let's get this on the others right now. And, you know, I'm thinking to myself, you know, this is one of the places where if I had gotten an email saying, warning, your warranty only has 1 month left, but you can buy AppleCare, I might have responded to that email and gotten the AppleCare. Now, I say that, but then at the same time, I start to think, you know, do I really know I didn't get that email?
That's what I was going to tell you. I mean, you know,
when I get those kinds of emails, you know, honestly, how often do I actually pay attention to what the hell they're saying?
To it. That's right.
You know, because I know I get random crap from Apple. You know, as I do from various other vendors, I have things, you know, to deal with, you know, and did I get something like that? You know, I'm actually scanning through my mail from Apple right now, and I don't see such a message in August, which would have, my warranty would have expired August 30th. And I see, you know, my shipment confirmation for Leopard. I see, you know, a general something for the iPhone GS. I don't know. I don't see it. Maybe I did have it, but you know, maybe I didn't. But because you're absolutely right. Like, you tune out those kinds of emails.
And so many of them.
Having said that, you know, part of my job for my company that I shan't name. Oh, look, I used the word shan't. Relates to various promotional emails that are sent out. And so,
well, I mean, it's not like there is a zero response rate to these emails. I mean, don't get me wrong, but the truth of the matter is.
But like, for me as a person, I can sit here and say, you know, it would have been nice for them to mail me that, but I can't guarantee you that if they did mail me that, I would have noticed.
You read it.
Because, right. You know, these things come by and I'm like, oh yeah, that's nice. Click. Next. Mm-hmm. You know, and every once in a while I pay attention to one, I admit, you know, but, you know, when it's coming from a company that, usually sends me okay stuff and doesn't send me too much, I'll pay attention. But even if I saw it, yeah, would I have taken action right then and there, or would I have said, "Oh yeah, I got to remember to do that," and then forgotten about it?
Okay, all right. So are we through our course?
I think we are today. I think we are. Unless you got anything else last minute to bring?
I don't think I do. So.
Okay, well then, you know, hey, here we go. 5 10-minute segments, nice and short. Well, not short, but shorter than we've done in the past. So thanks everybody for listening. And as usual, email me at abelsmay@abelsmay.com with any questions, comments, or thoughts. Or when you see the post on abelsmay.com advertising this episode, feel free to comment on there as well. That's it. I guess we'll talk to you again next week. Thank you, everybody, and goodbye.
Good night.